This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting to you from Burnaby, BC. Check out our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CJSF 90.1 FM to learn more about us.
Music and talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM. Discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens, our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony. This episode is produced in partnership with West Coast Women in Engineering, Science, and Technology.
This is the Best of the West, inspiring women with real stories, hosted by West Coast Women in Engineering, Science, and Technology.
Hello, and welcome to Best of the West. I'm your host, Danielle, and today we're joined by Sheila Pirmarati. Sheila is a industrial engineer who has her PhD in mechatronic systems engineering from Simon Fraser University. Passionate to utilize her research in industry as a business process analyst, Sheila helps the City of Vancouver's business units identify potential areas for improving effectiveness and efficiency of their processes and value streams. As an advocate for women's empowerment, Sheila joined as a board member at the Society for Canadian Women in Science and Technology in 2014 to help shape new ideas for professional development of women in STEM. She also helps the American Society for Quality analyze membership data and increase value to quality management professionals. Welcome to the podcast, Sheila.
Thank you so much, Danielle.
Why don't we start with you telling us a bit about what occupies your days?
Sure. So I work at the City of Vancouver, and I'm a part of a business unit that is providing consultancy to the entire city. In terms of going into each of the business units, finding what are the current state of their processes, you know, usually when there's headache at work, it's about processes, not the people. Mm-hmm. And we have to articulate that first of all for the people and then help them revise their processes, identify what are typical areas of waste, such as extra waiting time, missing information, duplicates, and such, in order to improve them. So that's what I do on a daily basis.
Potential areas for improving effectiveness sounds very interesting.
Absolutely.
How did you end up at your current position?
Oh, okay. So industrial engineering is all about optimization and kind of how to improve things. So that mindset had helped me already gain this kind of skills to revise and to identify opportunities for efficiency improvement from one point. And from the other point, the set of the people that I met throughout my grad studies in Vancouver and kind of the opportunities that I had for some informational interview and such all led me to find out service-based organizations like City of Vancouver are among the organizations that I like to work for more than manufacturing typically. I mean, mm-hmm. for me, it was the case. So all just one led to the other, and that's how I got this job.
Awesome. That's great. Leverage your connections and figure out what sectors you like to work for. That's all really good.
True.
So other than leveraging, you know, those people that you met during your grad studies, were there any other key events that helped you get to where you are now?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I remember, you know, in almost the end stage of my grad studies, I started volunteering with SQIST, Society for Canadian Women in Science and Technology, as a means of leveraging some of my expertise, as well as gaining new skills, expanding my network, and also kind of exiting that comfort zone that I had in the PhD studies, and mainly because I was interested in connecting to industry people more than staying in academia. Mm-hmm. That volunteership opportunity so much expanded my horizons in many ways. And at the first, I was volunteering with the Immigrating Women in Science program, IWIS, which is mainly to support immigrating women in Canada to help them kind of have a smooth transition into the Canadian job market after immigration. Volunteering with that program helped me kind of shape ideas. Like, now I have needs as a newcomer to Canada, because I came to Canada in 2009. And after a few years, I was thinking, what are the best companies or best organizations in my own field? So in order to answer those type of questions, I wanted to meet new people, new professionals who knew the answers. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking, why not to bring those people as some kind of guest speaker to events that IWIS was holding, in order for them to share ideas with other people like me as well. So that kind of events that I was holding and I was organizing with a group of amazing volunteers at IWIS program all helped kind of getting there, finding the answers to my questions and take it from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. As a fellow SQIST board member, I don't think any of us can say enough great things about it and how it's really supported all of our professional development.
I agree for sure.
Can you tell me a bit about what specific areas in your field you're interested in pursuing and why?
Well, you know, nowadays I'm more into kind of monitoring things from an operational level, where I can identify opportunities to improve daily kind of tasks or daily achievements of a specific process. Mm-hmm. To me, from here, which is absolutely fundamental to success of a business, the next area of interest is how to take it from operational to a strategic level. Like, what's the best direction for a business in order to make the best services to the citizens? You know, city as a public sector organization is not looking for revenue or profit necessarily. It's different from a manufacturing context, but still, they have to set strategies and find among all the possibilities around, what's the best next move for us in order to be successful in fulfilling the services or the requirements mm-hmm. as an organization. That's what I'm hoping to move into in future, in close future.
That's awesome. Good luck with that. Can you tell me, and this doesn't have to be just from your job, but what has been one of your most memorable moments from your career or your education?
Well, I will give an example from my career. It was a few months after I got this position. And then, because my team is called Continuous Process Improvement, and what we do is just these types of projects for the entire city, I came across an award. It was a Quality and Business Excellence Award by American Society for Quality. And at that time, I wasn't a board member, but it was like there's an award that organizations can make self-nominations and articulate how they meet four criteria, like customer service, operational excellence, education, support for the employees, and such and such. So I was just curious and thinking that I can definitely nominate our team and kind of show how we have been working toward these four criteria for the entire organization. So kind of I took the lead in writing a proposal, and just I had to learn a lot about the past projects that had taken mm-hmm. place before my time, because it was just for me a few months. Mm-hmm. So I had to interview all my team members and find out what they have achieved, and kind of, you know, show the achievements in a quantifiable or a measurable mm-hmm. mode, like from a baseline to a specific target, and find out which of the projects fit within fulfilling which of the criteria or each of the criteria for the award. So that was an amazing experience, where I had to spend even hours at work to make it kind of happen. I remember a few days I left at around 10 p.m. in the night.
Oh boy.
Yeah. And when we were told that we have been the award winner, it was like a very, very rewarding moment for me.
Yeah.
After a few months. Yeah.
That's congratulations. That's really a big achievement after a few months.
And actually, it was not that I have achieved those
right.
outcomes, but I helped kind of giving visibility to the outcomes of
yeah.
my team.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's a great accomplishment. So, Sheila, maybe referencing back to that 10 p.m. leaving work, how do you achieve work-life balance, or do you really think that one exists?
Ah, that question. Well, actually, to be honest, at this point in my life, I don't think I have a work-life balance. But at the same time, you know, definition of balance can be different. Sometimes I think the fact that I make time to go to various events after work is a kind of balance, because it's what I love And that's my lifestyle. So let's be fine with it. I mean, I've learned to be fine and not be blaming myself or not feeling bad just because I'm gaining something for the time that I'm spending outside work hours. But I know, you know, people have can have different answers for this. And I've also learned a lot from other people. For me, at work, just as an example, during work, it was like blocking my calendar for tasks was helping. Not not all the time, but for a good few months, I was trying to stick to that kind of mindset and do whatever I wanted to or I had planned to do at that time rather than just skipping it. Nowadays, I'm starting to skip it and I know it's not a good way of doing stuff.
Yeah, I think, well, and especially when you're someone who looks to optimize things, I'm sure you come up with many ways to optimize yourself, too.
You know, I read a sentence somewhere which is very inspiring, like the largest room in the world is the room for improvement. So I think there's never such a point that something is so optimal that cannot be further improved, for sure.
So what do you do when you're dealing with a lot of stress? How do you cope with that? Like if things are busier than normal or you're getting stressed out over a project or a volunteer thing, what do you do to cope with that?
Well, interestingly, I recently learned something from a colleague, which I try to apply it and I find it very useful. It was like, you know, we all know that the typical answer is prioritize. For sure, that's one thing. But in spite of knowing that, all of us get stressed at times. I think what this colleague told me was just about think of what you own and what you don't necessarily need to own at the workplace. Whenever a request comes to you or whenever there's a suggestion that you're very excited to take over, just kind of rethink for a moment. Do I need to own this or not? I think that has a bit helping me. I mean, by a bit, I mean that it's very recently that I have started applying it, but I'm sure it would be very beneficial in future as well. That's only way I can recommend now.
Awesome. Thanks for the tip. I'm going to loop back a little bit to the work-life balance and ask if there's anything you'd like to share about what you do in your very heavy air quotes spare time. We've talked about your volunteering with Squist. Is there anything else that you get up to in your spare time that you'd like to share?
Sure. So apparently my spare time is spent in two ways, or three ways. One is true spare time, where I'm home and I would be taking care of cooking and such. I call that true spare time. Other than that, either I've been volunteering and kind of delivering stuff or making some accomplishments, taking care of some responsibilities, such as Squist and with American Society for Quality, or I'm just a participant to an event which is helping my personal growth and professional development. So it's like not necessarily always I'm doing stuff. It's like many times I'm audience to some events, which I still find very useful, and I cannot let them go even though it has been after 8 hours of work.
I hear you on that one. But I think as someone who likes to optimize, I can see why you would want to invest time in personal and professional development.
Well, you know, the era we live in, I think requires us to think there's never enough education. There's so much speed to stuff changing and kind of new and cool stuff coming into the world that we have to cope with learning and have to set aside some time to keep that momentum going on, regardless of how or when we graduated from university, for example.
Ah, great advice. Very good advice. So, Gila, thinking way, way, way back to before you were an undergrad student, what inspired you to study in a STEM field?
Well, it goes back to when I was a small kid. You know, there's two parts to that, I think. From one aspect, and for the reason that I don't ever know, I was always interested in opening and disassembling stuff as much as they could be disassembled. And I don't know for what reason, always I've had this curiosity. Like these mechanical pens were the very first things that I opened. They belonged to my siblings. And I remember I let one of those springs or components kind of go and I never assembled it back and I didn't tell anyone about it. That was the personal part that was making me curious to find more and learn more. And from the other side, my elder sister at that time was nursing student. She had a type of personality that when she came home from classes and afterwards from work, she would tell us about anything that happened in the workplace. This person had a heart problem, and then all of a sudden what happened and such and such. Those descriptions was kind of very exciting to me. And even though I didn't end up, or I never was interested in going to do health studies or become a nurse typically, but still, I think that has been very impactful in inspiring me to pursue a career in sciences. And I ended up in engineering anyway.
Awesome. So how did you decide specifically industrial engineering?
That choice at the time that I was graduating from high school, it was kind of like, again, back to my tendency for disassembling mm-hmm. and assembling. I learned about mechanical engineering to be kind of what I should pursue. So mechanical engineering at that point was my first choice. But very randomly, I was introduced to industrial engineering as some similarity with mechanical and some management perspective as well. Mm-hmm. And someone kind of just recommended me to learn more about it. At that point, I just learned more about and talked to a few industrial engineering graduates, mm-hmm. through which I learned, well, there's more to mechanical engineering. I mean, I can still learn a lot from the manufacturing perspective while I leverage skills in order to be a liaison between many engineers of different fields in the workplace, which I liked so much.
Yeah, we talk a lot on the podcast about how engineering is not just being a super smart person in a cubicle by yourself. It has a lot to do with communication and working in teams.
Absolutely. And it's so much needed in order to be a successful engineer, and also in order to make the workplace, you know, a rewarding place for everyone. Communication is a must.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So don't forget, those soft skills are just as important as your math scores. So, Sheila, you told us a bit about how you chose industrial engineering as an undergrad. Do you want to tell us a bit about your path through your master's to your PhD in mechatronic systems engineering and how you chose to go with that?
Sure. So my master's was still in industrial engineering. And I remember at the time that I was almost close to graduation, I again did some research in terms of what is the best next step. I was a fan of continuing and doing grad studies as compared to right away going into the job market. Because of that, I had to do this research. And I was very hesitant about either doing for or going for industrial engineering or doing an MBA. So I kind of, out of that research for kind of like stories that are very long, I chose industrial engineering again, which I very much enjoyed. And then I migrated to Canada at that time, and I wasn't even a student at that time. My husband got admission from SFU, and just I had to wrap up my mind in terms of what I'm going to do, whether to apply for a work permit or apply for a study permit and kind of pursue further studies. And it was a 4 month of making decision. during that 4 months, I met a few people, a few profs from UBC, from business schools, from so anywhere that you could imagine that would be a bit close to my program or my background, I explored those options. And out of those explorations, I met someone from mechatronic systems engineering who then became my supervisor. So it kind of was like, I'm not saying it was a very planned move, but at the same time, it turned out to be the best move for me at the time. I got a very, very supportive supervisor. I'm always very thankful for. And so I just started, and gladly, my supervisor, Dr. Gary Wang, he had a few students from industrial engineering background as well. So he was the only prof at the entire department that had a interdisciplinary field of research that worked for me well. And I took it from there, and nicely in the end of my studies, it was tied back to how to optimize manufacturing costs, how to reduce fuel efficiency. My field of research was electric vehicles and hybrid electric vehicles. So there we were caring about the multi-objective optimization of the mm-hmm. products in such a way that for both customer and manufacturer, it's the best option. So how kind of like conflicting priorities, but how to make the best trade-off for both sides.
Yeah.
And that's how I ended up in mechatronic systems engineering.
Awesome. If you had to go back, or maybe speaking to some of the prospective students these days, if they're trying to figure out what to do in university or how to approach university, do you have any advice for them?
So apparently, I see lots of opportunities in Canada as compared to back in my kind of condition when I was almost 17 years old or close to graduation from high school. In Canada, and one example is the Miss Infinity program of SQUIST, where high school students are kind of being given the education or the awareness that they need in order to find whether there's a specific field in math, science, engineering, and technology that fascinates them or kind of attracts to them more than anything. Mm-hmm. I really want to recommend the high school students to allow exposure to various opportunities, something like that one, to just explore and just observe to see what's clicking or what's resonating with their interests more than anything at the first place. And talking to people, definitely people like me or whoever has gone through some path is so willing to share those lessons learned with younger generation all the time, just telling mm-hmm. them pros and cons of everything they've gone through. So don't be shy. Just start a conversation. For sure, elder generation, and I won't call myself elder generation, but I mean, just people who are a few years older than them are so happy to share all those hints with them.
Yeah, I think that's something that when you're young, you're like, I've got this figured out. I know what's going on. And maybe you're also nervous to ask for help, but it's amazing how much people like talking about themselves. And giving advice to the younger generation. So definitely, whether you're in high school trying to figure out university or at any level of your career, find someone who's been there. Find someone who can give you that advice, because I promise they'll probably do it for free or maybe the price of a coffee.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's some good advice. Were there any challenges you had to face during your education or in your career?
Well, talking about, you know, gender equity, that's one point. In my bachelor's program, I remember, you know, industrial engineering has so many very practical courses like welding, like casting and machinery stuff that you have to do. And I awesome. Love those. Yeah. I so much miss those times. I remember during those workshops, some of the instructors, not all of them, weren't enough aware or enough careful to give enough opportunities or equal opportunities to the female students as much that they were giving to the male students to just observe. You know, mm-hmm. even as simple as some male students were taller and they were blocking our sight just because they were standing in the front line of observing what's going on in that welding area or whatever. Mm-hmm. So those things are like the things that I started kind of fighting for, and I was finding myself as if I was such a, I don't know, vocal student at that time, or as if I'm not a very compatible person, but now I'm appreciative of whatever I did at that time for myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Be proud of standing up for what you need.
Yes.
So, Sheila, can you share with me a bit about how your work can come impact the world at large? Like, where would we see it? How? What changes could we see, or what changes will we see in the future?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, I don't know which example to give. There are lots of examples. So I'll start with something related to environmental impacts. As you know, we are now thinking of how to migrate from clean or from fossil fuels to clean energy. Mm-hmm. And that's also related to the vehicles we are using. So imagine an organization like a city or a municipality is large enough with lots of departments like parks, security, every department, they require so many vehicles from small to large, even from a mower to some kind of excavator for constructions and such mm-hmm. and such. All those vehicles, just summing them up for all the departments, it would be a large number, over 1,000 maybe for the city, as mm-hmm. I know. What my work does, and specifically kind of optimization can help with, typically is like finding whether we have the optimal number of vehicles or optimizing the fleet size, whether there are vehicles that can be or kind of can be used in shifts in order for less number of vehicles so that the emissions, GHG emissions and such are going to be reduced and kind of the carbon footprint is going to be reduced or not. So that's a typical idea or an example of how optimization can help the city and the citizen and then the entire globe in sequence.
Yeah.
Also, there's another cool example, and this is not a project necessarily I've been involved in, but one of the colleagues is doing that, and I found it so fascinating. So again, back to cities examples, city has to do lots of professional construction. And for that purpose, we may need to go to various vendors and kind of receive the service from a vendor or from a contractor. And for receiving each and every service, imagine every day they would come and work for a few hours, they would send us an invoice. So just imagine if it's a paper-based invoice, how many papers would be piled up over time? What's the chance of losing some of them and organization, storage, archival, retrieval, everything? So this project was first about combining invoices and putting a requirement or guiding the vendors, the top vendors, to combine their invoices, not sending one per each service they had provided. Just send them on a weekly or monthly basis, just a summation on in a digital form or a soft copy rather than a paper-based copy. So the amount of saving and the ability of storage or search or kind of, you know, even uploading the data into financial services systems of the organization was drastically making improvements into people's operational time and overall efficiency of that business unit.
I can imagine. I mean, ditch the paper. That's way the future, right?
Yeah.
So I want to follow up with that and just ask you where you think your career will take you in the next 5 to 10 years.
Well, I may be able to imagine for the next few years. I don't know whether 5 or 10. But essentially in the area that I'm working, still there are lots of opportunities for improvement in the organization. At the same time, many of these improvement areas involve more than one department or more than one business unit. The concept of value stream, where we are talking about something that adds value or provides a kind of output for a specific customer, has to touch so many various departments. And that concept, and in order to kind of deliver a timely service, how each business unit have to put their share in and how they have to be optimized in order for the entire process to be working well, is something that I find very, very interesting to work towards. And I find this to be like a doctor in an organization where you kind of do a checkup for, I wouldn't say patient, for the business units.
Yeah.
So by checking them up and sending them to labs, which is through our KPIs and measuring their performance, we find out whether there's a trend or whether there's something that we can kind of look into or there's a need for improvement and provide some kind of remedy, which is those solutions for improvement, and then kind of help them just get back to the normal or the ideal path. So I think still I would have lots to explore in this area for the next few years in a higher level and in a level that is engaging more and more business units rather than one specific area of the processes.
That sounds super fascinating. Good luck with that. So we're going to move on to our lightning round questions. These are short questions that have nothing to do with your career. Or maybe they don't. Let's see. Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Yeah. What is your favorite word?
Well, it's two words. Operational excellence.
Awesome. If you weren't working in this field, what do you think you would be doing?
Well, if I had enough money, I always loved traveling around the world.
Awesome. And jumping off of that, where's your favorite place to travel to?
I love you know, nature scenes that are untouched or undiscovered more than anything on Earth. So I would go just get lost somewhere.
I like that choice.